Every other year, as the General Assembly's biennial budget session comes to a close, legislative leaders, especially those in the majority, are wont to describe whatever they've accomplished as historic. This time around, that may be the case. Despite logistical challenges created by the pandemic, lawmakers passed a sweeping policing reform package, reined in the authority of the governor and local officials, and crafted a $38.6 billion budget that includes unprecedented funding increases for schools and infrastructure improvements. What's more, in another first, lawmakers decided not to adjourn, but rather to recess so they can return this fall to redraw congressional and legislative district maps. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll sit down with the leaders of the General Assembly's four caucuses. So don't go away. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. So, what can I say about the 2021 session of the Indiana General Assembly? Well, a lot, actually. But far more important than anything I'd say is the wisdom of my guests, the leaders of the four legislative caucuses. House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican. House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican. And Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. Thank you all. I know you're weary. You'd probably be 100 other places, namely a beach somewhere. Thank you for taking time. Wow. This session, we'll start with the budget. And I mentioned in the introduction at the top of the show that it's almost, you know, obligatory for legislative leaders to say what they did was historic. This year, the buzzword seems to be transformational. The governor used it, education secretary, others. Is it transformational, or do you have a different word that you would use, Todd Houston?
I would say transformational is a very good word. The other word I'd use is aggressive.
Elaborate on that.
I just think, you know, we felt like this was a unique time where you could make strong strategic investments that would have a massive impact on Indiana moving forward. And we want to be aggressive. We think this is a unique time for Indiana. We think this is an opportunity for us to propel ourselves beyond other states. And so we want to be aggressive as we did this budget, as we did public policy this year, to make sure we take advantage of this time.
Phil Giaquinta, we have transformational. We have aggressive. What, you like any of those, or are you going to go a different word?
Oh, how about maybe unprecedented? When I think about Washington, D.C. telling states what to do and without any money attached to it, and certainly now with the result of the Biden plan that was passed in this year, and then the money coming to Indiana and all the states, it's really, I think, put Indiana in a decent place to do some things. And I look back at, I think we all saw probably toward the end of the year, back in December, that the forecast was going to look better than maybe what we thought. And then as we got into the year, as more people have gone back to work, revenues have gone up, again, with the plan from Washington, D.C., has put us in a pretty unique, different place.
Yeah, if you asked me 6 months ago, not that my prognostication is worth much, I would have said unprecedented because of COVID. Sure, aggressive. I'm not sure I would have agreed with you, but I think it certainly did turn out that way. Senator Rod Bray, you got a word?
Well, so transformational certainly works. Record setting, I think. I think if you look back 10 years from now to this time and this budget, I think you're going to look at a very significant kind of watershed event where we have made some huge strides, both for the state of Indiana, but also as we compare to other states around us in our investment in infrastructure and things that are going to have a really excellent return on investment, as well as the school funding that we have taken care of. I just think that you're going to see this as being a pivotal moment. Maybe pivotal is the word that I'm looking for. For Indiana to take a really nice turn in a good direction.
Well, in several cases, there are some pretty large reserve funds that have been constructed, $900 million in one case to deal with future projects. So I guess the notion of this being long-term gain is...
Well, absolutely, because you take care of some really significant pieces like unemployment insurance and some pension obligations that we had that were out there that we were... ticking away on pretty well, but this takes makes huge inroads into that, and will free up other money for opportunities later on, and so it's just going to continue to pay dividends for us.
Senator, you said it was on the floor. I think you said it was the best budget you'd seen, but imperfect. Elaborate on that. What's you got a word for us?
I got a word called interesting. I think it's interesting.
Unprecedented and interesting. I love the way you can just, those are so generic. That's good. You can cut either way.
Well, I think that all of us need to recognize the importance of the American Rescue Plan and put us in a position where we can do some things that are important to Hoosiers. I would agree with my colleagues that we've been able to substantiate some of the funds that we had to use during this very difficult time that we've been in. But the people we need to thank the most are actually in Washington, D.C. They provided us with some resources to help businesses, because that unemployment insurance fund is going to be funded almost to $1 billion. And, you know, the businesses have to thank Washington, D.C. for that type of funding. And when it comes to the school funding formula, I think we, if you look at it and you delve deep into it, it kind of reveals our priorities in Indiana.
You know, listening to y'all talk, I talk about pivotal time, you know, this being the right time to take aggressive action. Going into this session, I certainly thought COVID-19 would be looming over everything, but I thought it would have more to do with just the mechanics. You proved that you made it work with some adjustments in terms of physical proximity and the way people testified and so forth. But the way it ended up shaping the session, COVID and the pandemic, is what you're saying. It created this opportunity. So this question, I hope it doesn't come off wrong, because it's a tragedy. Lots of people lost loved ones. They'll never be replaced. There's nothing good. However, is Indiana, in an odd, bizarre kind of way, better off because of COVID? Everything I've heard is we would have just had sort of a budget that maybe scraped by, and now we're talking about this almost once in a generation sort of opportunity. Are we saying that somehow COVID, this tragedy, was actually a fiscal windfall for the state of Indiana?
Jonathan, you know, look, there's no doubt that the federal dollars allow us to make one-time investments. But, you know, we were on the trajectory, and the dollars that went into K-12 funding, the dollars that went into a lot of the things that we made strategic investments on, including the regional acceleration grants, you know, those were dollars in broadband that were actually in our House budget before we even knew there were federal dollars coming. So we were on the right trajectory. I think what COVID did was it allowed Indiana, the very best things about Indiana, it's a great place to live, work, raise a family. And in a COVID environment, those things become extraordinarily important, where you can get out, you have a good cost of living, you can own a home, you can get out. I think the governor handled the restrictions amazingly. And I think it, you know, all of a sudden it wasn't attractive to be in large, you know, metropolitan areas on the east or west coast. It was, you know, it made being in middle America, the sensibilities of middle America, a great place to live. And we're benefiting from that. And so this is why I said we had to be aggressive, use the term transformational, because this is a unique opportunity where we can attract people to Indiana, because it highlights what COVID and what happened post-COVID highlights the greatest strengths of Indiana.
And you cited a few things that are sort of the highlights of the budget. Whether they were there, it certainly made it easier to keep them in there with the federal dollars flowing.
And a revenue forecast. Let's be honest.
$2 billion in
additional. Absolutely.
I certainly didn't see that coming. But if you look, you mentioned a few things. The READY grants, economic development, replacing the regional grants that were in place from the Pence administration, $500 million there. You mentioned broadband, $250 million there. Record spending for K-12, $1.9 billion in additional funds, twice what you all basically had talked about going into the session. Phil Giaquinta, a lot of money on that's been spent. Did you get it right? Did your counterparts who have supermajorities get it right?
Well, he'll have to wait and see. We have to vote on it here in a couple hours. But back to your earlier question, I don't think any of us obviously are going to trade anything for having gone through this terrible pandemic and the lives that it's cost. And let's not make paint too rosy of a picture, because a lot of still, a lot of closed businesses, a lot of small businesses, restaurants that we hope will come back. But it's taken a toll. Mental health. I mean, kids that had to go to school but stay at home and do it, and when they want to be in the classroom with their friends. So the pandemic has really taken quite a toll, and it's going to take a while for us to come to bounce back.
Of course, the good news, I guess, again, within the context of bad news, which we'll stipulate. You mentioned the kids getting kind of catching up. There's recovery dollars that are certainly in the budget, a lot of money there. Small business targeted, even the arts and the small business targeted for funds. So perhaps help is on the way.
Well, and we had a lot of workers on the front line, healthcare workers, obviously our teachers, things like that, that hopefully will be able to benefit from this budget as well.
Well, it sounds like a lot of money's been thrown at this unprecedented infrastructure, unprecedented virtually everything. You mentioned mental health. You know, a few weeks ago, advocates were concerned that there was going to be a cut. Now that's fully funded and then some. So talk about a chicken in every pot. It's certainly good news. Is this the dream budget, Rod Bray?
I don't think of a dream budget in any way, shape, or form. And with COVID, obviously, we never would want that to come. I remember in 2020, we finished up our legislative session with a number of priorities that we had made progress on and thought, all right, we'll come back and deal with health care costs and things again here in this 21. And COVID took us, obviously, pretty far from that. And but Indiana proved to be incredibly resilient, and I'm very grateful for that. And so that's given us a pretty healthy budget that we're in right now. And because we watched unemployment drop all the way to about 17.5%, and now it's about 3.9%. So we've come back in a very strong way. I think we need to be careful. I don't want to be a downer on where we're at right now and how far we've come. But, you know, with all the money that has been put into the economy, I have to be concerned. I'm not smart enough to know how inflation doesn't come to us. So whatever we do with this budget and whatever we have done, we have to be cognizant of the fact that this economy may not continue to plug along for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. We have to make sure that we continue to have reserves and have that rainy day prepared for, because I think it will come.
And Greg Taylor, I know you've been generally pleased, but you were disappointed that some things didn't happen. You know, you wanted to see a minimum wage increase. You wanted to see, which isn't a budget item per se, but you wanted to see more funding directly to food banks and sort of immediate assistance for individuals. These types of maybe programs. There was disappointment that, for instance, unemployment benefits of unemployed Hoosier workers the tax on that will not be waived. On the disappointments that
There's a lot that I heard here, but the proof is, as my grandmother used to say, the proof is in the pudding. You know, we could talk about how great the governor did during this pandemic, yet we passed legislation to restrict the governor's use of emergency orders. In both chambers, the governor is going to have to come to us before he does that again. I think that's an interesting scenario. The other things in regards to what we've done with public school funding, you know, I started out supporting vouchers, and now we're going to double down. Now people that make a family of four that makes $145,000 a year is going to be able to get a voucher.
300% of the reduced free lunch.
I thought this program was about kids who went to schools that were failing. That's one pathway, but there's nine other ones. I want to elaborate on a couple other things. You know, I find it very interesting. That's why I said this is an interesting budget, that we're sitting here talking about what the future and what we didn't predict. Senate Democrats, to our benefit, supported $600 million based on a program and a study that was done by the governor's office way back in January. Senator Eddie Melton had that bill, and I want to thank the leadership for actually putting that in place. It's important to understand that we don't predict the future here, but we are in that position right now.
A lot of jumping off points there. But let's talk about it.
I just want to make sure that we understand.
Teacher increases. I mean, it is covered, the $600 million proposition. We hope. And there now is a mechanism, as there never has been to this degree, whereby you're kind of putting the screws to local school districts who actually, in theory, make these decisions. But 45% of all tuition support now has to go to that recommended $40,000 minimum salary.
Recommended.
So recommended, I know. But if they don't, you have to write why you're not doing it.
Explain.
So, well, it sounds like you can declare victory on that front and still have funding for the choice program, which I'm guessing that was in your budget. That was not to that degree in the Senate budget. You won out, I'm guessing, because the coffers were overflowing.
Well, I think I would hate to say anybody won out. I think, you know, these are all part of discussions, and Senator Bray and Senator Mishler and Chairman Brown and I had conversations, and we got to the place we wanted to be. John, I think the most important thing that doesn't get talked about this budget is the flexibility it gives us moving forward. You know, Senator Bray noted, we don't know what's coming ahead of us. I hope the economy continues to be a rocket ship. That's great for all Hoosiers. If it isn't, we've given ourselves some flexibility. If it is, look, I can't wait as a fiscally conservative person. I can't wait to come back and talk about how we allow more Hoosiers to keep more money in their pockets. So I think that's the most important thing about this budget. It's responsible, and it gives us flexibility for how we move forward, no matter which way the economy goes.
And Phil Giaquina, there's so much good news on the school front in terms of basic tuition support and other sorts of programs. Does that placate members of your caucus who would say the school choice proposal really irks me? Does this?
Well, it's interesting because looking over the past four or five budgets, when I go and check the school run, and it's around 1.5% to 2% increase. Yet over the course of those same years, the school choice eligibility has also increased. So this year, though, it appears that I've seen increases for example, Fort Wayne Community Schools, frankly, like I've never seen before. Probably maybe the highest that I've ever seen. Now, if we want to talk about looking into the future, hopefully that we can all commit here that if we are going to have a difficult time in 2 years with the next budget, that we don't go back to 1% to 2% increase for traditional public schools, yet vouchers are going to continue where they are now or even expand. We may have to, and I would hope that we would then reduce the eligibility for vouchers, because that has not happened over the last several years.
Ron Bray, your caucus wasn't keen on you had significant increase in funding for K-12 education, but it was primarily the foundational support. The complexity factor was built in, which tends to aid schools with higher poverty rates. There's still some of that, not as much. Instead, there is a lot for school choice. Can you live with that?
Oh, yeah.
I guess you can, because it's you agreed to it.
We're going to do it. We're going to vote on it here shortly. And, it does. We had built up the complexity index a little bit. We also focused on disabled kids and English language learners that we think was going to be helpful to schools and students across the state of Indiana. But, the piece about vouchers and the parents' ability to choose really is a good policy, and it's something that our caucus has embraced, maybe not quite on the same level or at the same pace as the House, but it does great things for students across the state, and it makes all of our schools better, frankly.
Not happy with it, I'm guessing.
I don't even understand where the dialogue has gone. Since we started the voucher program at $15 million,
This was 10 years. It's been a decade.
10
right?
years, yeah. $15 million. Again, going back to the premise, poor kids who were in failing schools. Now we're at $264 million. $264 million for vouchers. And it's for families that have $140,000 to $5,000. Listen, I sent my children to a private school. I did not, at that time, and I had five people in my family, we didn't make $145,000, but we found a way to prioritize where we wanted our children to go. Choice is embedded in our public school system. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that you could go to any school in the district as long as they have room. It's already embedded in our public school system. But finally, the most important part, over 91% of our kids are in traditional public schools. Less than 3% are in vouchers, and we've multiplied that by 1,000 times.
And yet the majority of the money goes to public schools, and I'd only say this, over 30,000 kids have chosen a voucher school. chosen.
Great. I would appreciate that.
So I think that, you know, I think this is, I think over 100, to speak to Senator Taylor's point, 160,000 plus kids have chosen a different school than the school, their neighborhood school.
Yeah.
Giving families choice, I'm for every single time. I think Hoosiers have shown it. Families have voted with their feet, and that is coming from somebody who went to public schools, kids went to public schools, and served on public school board.
And I guess we won't know the price tag on that because,
we don't know the price tag.
But you have said that regardless of participation rates, the $600 million for teacher increases will be unharmed. So much we could talk about here. I mean, the budget, there's no cigarette tax in the budget. There had been a proposal of $2. That was reduced at one point to $1, then 50 cents. Then some people said it's not enough to curb bad behavior. Others said it's disproportionate impact on. Should smoking opponents give up on that, Phil Giaquina? This has been going on for years now.
Right.
And if
right.
ever you would think there would be a year that they would find support, it's coming off of COVID, where Hoosiers, because of their smoking rates and other health factors, didn't do as well as some of their counterparts across the country.
I don't think they should give up. I personally have always supported a dollar, maybe $1.50 increase. I'm not sure where the rest of the caucus members are, but that's something personally that I've always have advocated for and supported. So, no, I don't think they should give up at all.
And you were the thinking that is a disproportionate impact, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
It's a very regressive tax, obviously. And we'll continue to have this conversation. Someday we'll get there to a spot where we think it might make sense. One thing we want to be very careful of, if we put in that cigarette tax, it needs to be high enough so that it does dissuade people from beginning to smoke or continuing to smoke. But also, we want to have a good path for where those dollars will go so that they help the health parameters that we need to be helping for the state of Indiana and help move the needle on some of those kind of important factors where we're lagging behind a little bit. So we'll continue to have that conversation, and someday we may very well get there.
Vaping products are going to be taxed now, but again, I'm guessing, Greg Taylor, you would have been happy to see the $2 increase or...
Look, I don't like regressive taxes because you tend to depend on them, and as my colleague said here, my only concern was where were we going to spend the money when we raised that tax, and I think Senator Bray put it best. We got to make sure we put those resources into places that's going to help curb the use of those products. So that's most important to me.
And it seems, I'm kind of rushing here, but it seems that, you know, we ended the session with a real love fest, the news conference where Governor talked about collaboration. There was a time in the session where a lot of the pundits, at least, were talking about the tension between the governor's office and Republicans in the House and Senate. You did pass, as was noted earlier, you curbed the governor's emergency powers. Local health officials no longer will have the ability to extend those kinds of measures, health-related measures, in their communities unless local councils and commissioners go along. I mean, where do things stand with the governor? Are you guys, you don't.
Great.
I mean, on
work
the one hand, you said he did a great job, but on the other hand,
But look, I've said this in great relationship with the governor. Always have been. We've had conversations throughout this entire thing. First of all, John, we didn't curb. You know, Title 10, which gives the governor the executive authorities that he has today, has not been changed. What it does is it allows the legislative body to be able to come back if we are unhappy with what took place. I want to be fair. Senator Bray and I had multiple conversations with the governor throughout the last year about the ability. If we would have asked, he would have called us back in for special session. But you watch other states, and you watch the tension between other states. And in Indiana right now, before the House Bill 1123 was passed, the legislature had no opportunity to come back without being called for special session. The other thing I just say about the local is all we're doing in the local situation, John, is making sure the elected body has the opportunity to review health orders that impact the greater, the greater community. Just like the governor of our state may take recommendations from the Department of Health and other leaders, but he ultimately is the responsible elected official to propose those actions.
Almost out of time, believe it or not. So.
Wait,
I've got to ask my last question.
All right.
If you can do it in 10 seconds, go.
This is unprecedented that I'm sitting here hearing this. The governor vetoed 1123. in less than 48 hours.
That's emergency powers,
yeah. So the relationship, I can't speak to their relationship, but we came back and overrode for the second time this session the governor's veto. And they're talking about how kumbaya they were. I don't understand what that means.
The other one being a tenant-landlord rights bill.
Yeah, we overrode his veto. He vetoed 1123.
Well, that bill is going to go to court in all likelihood because some say it's unconstitutional.
Spend taxpayer dollars.
But maybe the flip side, some would say, that's okay because of redistricting, you didn't really adjourn sine die. You're just kind of taking a break so you can work on the maps. Now, I know your counterpart here said it would have to take, I think, five extraordinary circumstances.
Can I add one?
Add one more. Is there any chance that those kinds of measures, rather than this court battle, and we're going to have to wrap up, last word, is that going to be redistricting solely, or is there room for...
First of all, I'm not sure that'll go to court. We'll wait and see. But with regard to redistricting, yeah, that's why we're going to come back. You're not going to see us come back for small projects here or there. It's going to be redistricting. That's why we've done it. And unless something catastrophic happens that we don't see right now.
All right. Well, you didn't have to adjourn sine die. I guess we, though, do, according to the folks in the control room. Thank you very much for your work this session and for coming and talking about it with our viewers and listeners across the state. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Todd Houston of Fishers, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta of Fort Wayne, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray of Martinsville, and Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor of Indianapolis. Now that the 2021 session is in the books, we get the box scores from journalists who cover the State House on the season finale of Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. Ed, we heard a lot about policy. You're a process guy. What did you learn about this session and process?
Well, we learned that they can walk and chew gum at the same time, contrary to what they sometimes claim. But you remember Norm Cox, the longtime TV reporter, said, never believe them when they say that they can always do what they need to do. And we saw that this session. I think we also learned that we're never going to see a taxpayer rebate. We passed that law back about, 10 years ago or so to give rebates if the surplus got to be a certain point. And with all these billions that they're talking about, we're not going to get a rebate. So that's probably off the table for, the near and long future. We learned that germaneness is important again. That's something that Speaker Houston kind of imposed this year, making sure that amendments were relevant to bills and the people were staying on topic when they were talking on the floor. And that's important to the process. I think we also learned that the leaders can control their members on wedge issues again. And that's something that we kind of gotten away from a few years ago, and that kind of threatened the process. We also found that there's still an urban-rural split in the legislature and that there are differences and issues between rural and urban legislators. There's still a great deal of suspicion about what's going on in Indianapolis and the ability of Indianapolis to control itself. We also learned that Republicans will fund public education, particularly if they've got the federal cash to do it with.
Money helps, right? All right. I can't believe we're out of time. Ed, thanks for your insight today. Thanks for your insight throughout the session. I'm going to try to talk you into coming back next week for a little more, but if not, thank you. Appreciate your insight.
Great being with you.
For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.